Making a recipe that calls for butter? Make it better with European butter from France. With a minimum of 82% butterfat, it's no wonder French butter is the number one choice for chefs the world over. Whether you're whipping up an omelet, sauteing vegetables, or spreading it on toast, the rich, cultured flavor of butter from France always elevates. Be sure to look for Made in France on the label, and for recipes, tips, and tricks, go to tasteeurope.com.
There's a lot of ways to balance like sweetness in a dessert. You can kind of overwhelm like the balance one way or the other if you do way too much salt or way too much smokiness where you can't taste anything else. It's kind of like that trial and error that helps me kind of get through of like, oh, next time I'll do this and next time I'll do that.
This is Taste. I'm your host, Eliza Barbanel. Abby Balinkit is the author of Mayumu, Filipino Desserts Remixed, a delightful cookbook full of maximalist personality and transfixing sweets like the adobo chocolate chip cookie. She's a singular force in the New York City baking scene, and today it's so fun to have her in the studio to talk about what she's been up to since publishing her first book, her love of kitsch, and more. Abby Balinkit, this is Taste. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Eliza. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. This is like my first time recording in our fancy new studio, and you are dressed to impress, as always, with fuzzy strawberry earrings.
Is that what they... Actually, pizzas.
Oh, no.
It's fine.
Oh, no, I should start over. Okay.
No.
They do look like... I guess if they were strawberries, they'd have to be the pine berries.
That's true.
That are mostly yellow with the red spots on them.
It's hard to do like 3D. I guess pizza doesn't really make sense. So the shape, I would imagine you would, and like it seems like a strawberry. It's not
it's
your
like
fault.
It's like a pizza berry kind
pizza
of.
Pizza berry, yeah.
You also have cookie earrings that I've seen you wear before.
Yes.
How extensive is your food accessory collection?
Oh my God, it's quite extensive. I feel like earrings were really like my go-to accessory during the pandemic, and I really gravitate towards it on Zoom calls, just like nothing else to show off. And so I have a lot, just a lot.
What's your like latest, greatest addition to the food accessory wardrobe?
I would say it was really nice. One of my friends made my cookbook, just the cookbook title and with the little Holla Holla Baked Alaska, like as an earring for me. And I was like one of the sweetest like polymer clay kind of earrings I've had in my whole collection.
I love that. And I love that you have other polymer clay earrings in your collection. I know you do. And I would imagine that over the course of your book tour last year, you maybe were gifted other earrings or food accessories. I feel like when you can become known for something, it's such a fun totem that people can bring to you. Did that happen?
One of my old roommates in college, when I went to LA, she got me like a bedazzled, you know, like those coffee mugs that are like extra large. It had like Mayumu like all printed all over it. And like other people were dressing up kind of in like the colors like pink and hot pink and like lime green. So it was really such like a beautiful thing to witness in real life.
I love that. And because you're on my podcast, I get to ask you all the questions that I've always wanted to know. One of which is, have you always been such a like colorful maximalist dresser? And do you think that impulse is a similar impulse in terms of the flavors and the kind of colorful desserts that you make?
I feel like in high school, I was very like scene kid, like wannabe scene
yeah.
kid. And I really wanted to be emo. And I was just like on Tumblr a lot. So I feel like dark grunge was kind of like what I was going for. Didn't execute very well with what I had. But I think lately in life, like in my 20s and onward, I feel like color is just something that I love and gravitate towards. And definitely in baking, I feel like it's subconscious almost that it's like, oh, like I think there are certain spices that just like have so much flavor and they end up being like bright red or like ube, for example, is so purple. And I feel like that's just, it comes with the territory, I guess. And I think it's just like an interesting kind of thing to always think about. And for me, when I first started baking, I remember just like covering all my mistakes with like sprinkles and like rainbow sprinkles, any kind of sprinkle I could get, like Wilton from like Michael's, Joann's. And so it is something I love to use.
I also subscribe to the covering up mistakes with sprinkles school of baking. So yes. It makes me feel very seen and comforted that you operate from that same place sometimes. And I also love knowing that you had this kind of seen era because I find that so endearing. And I do think there is a similar impulse, even though aesthetically they're different. There's this like total commitment to wanting to execute a certain vibe in your aesthetic of something and just kind of wanting to say something with clothing. And I think like that's a really fun place to operate from. But really, I want to talk to you about Mayumu, which is such a special book and I think has had a really great reception since it came out last year. It's this Technicolor celebration of modern Filipino-American desserts like the Halo Halo Baked Alaska that you mentioned. And then, of course, the Adobo Chocolate Chip Cookie, of which I got to interview you about at a Cherry Bomb panel. But I only got to eat the raw dough because they were devoured so quickly by the class, which is honestly a testament to the cookie.
It's very heartbreaking. When I heard that, I was like, let me do this again. Let's redo this whole session. I feel so bad you didn't get one.
No, I mean, I just need to bake them myself, clearly, is the answer. And also, raw cookie dough is kind of my preferred way of trying cookies. Maybe that's sacrilegious to say.
No, also same.
But I do feel like there are so many standout desserts in your book. And I'm curious, like, being on Instagram, getting to see what people are making, what were the desserts that you were kind of getting tagged in the most?
Yeah, I was surprised that I think that, like, first and foremost, I feel like the Adobo chocolate chip cookies really got a big run because the New York Times, like, published the recipe, which was really helpful. But the other things, like the unsung heroes of the book, I would say people were really interested by, like, the Buko Pandan Cathedral jelly cake. And so it's kind of a mishmash of two separate like Filipino desserts, whereas like cathedral jelly is kind of like Spanish origin and everything for the holidays. It's basically like gelatin and like a mold with all like the colorful jello, kind of like shards of it all interspersed in this milky base. But then I love Buko Pandan, which is like kind of just like a chilled, like refreshing dessert that has like tapioca pearls and like a coconut like pandan sauce with just like all the coconut jellies you can imagine. And so mine is like a monochromatic kind of version of it. And then someone literally DM'd me 2 days ago and was like, I didn't realize I don't have like your pandan extract that has the green food coloring. So it came out just pure white, but it was like beautiful. It was kind of like an ice sculpture. And I was like, it's fascinating to see like where like things are. People are like apologize first when things go slightly wrong, but it's not wrong. It's just like different. And I think that's really empowering to kind of see as like a cookbook author, just like these are your creations in theory, but like other people kind of, it takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, I know. And imagine as somebody that cooks other people's recipes as well, like you've done similar tweaks or substitutions for things. And it's part of the way that people live with recipes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not stagnant. It's like constantly like a living thing that you just get to tweak and change. And I think that's really beautiful. I'm trying not to be too much of a stickler about rules, especially, I guess with baking, you kind of have to be with certain parameters, but it's okay to do what you can with what you have.
Yeah, I'm trying not to be a stickler about rules, says the person with the like pizza berry earrings.
Yes.
Not shocking. I feel like there are a lot of chilled or kind of set desserts in your book, which is probably the area of dessert making that I have the most fear and least amount of experience with, beyond like maybe puff pastry, which I would never touch to begin with. Do you have any like tips or advice on how you can approach those recipes to have them be successful?
Yeah, I know it's like, I'm even afraid sometimes of like jellies not unmolding.
Because I've seen like Great British Bake Off and I think watching it go wrong has just instilled the fear in me.
I think like under pressure, when you're really under a time crunch, it sucks when you just, honestly, it takes time. I think with jellies, you just have to let it set, sometimes overnight, and it's going to be okay. But like sometimes I like to like jiggle it a little bit and just like kind of feel it in the pan, like whether it's sloshing, then it's maybe wet. And so I think your instincts are always right when it comes to that. And sometimes I do like a spray of like Pam to be like extra greasy, like please come out. But when you're about to overturn your like pan, just make sure that you kind of heat it a little bit in like hot water, like a little bain-marie or something. And it'll help it kind of ease out.
Oh, I like that. And I also like the Pam idea, which I've never done before.
Yeah, yeah. It helps. It definitely helps.
Yeah, I feel like I had one traumatic experience trying to unmold. What was it? It was an old Martha Stewart recipe. I think it was like a cake bomb, but it was filled with chocolate mousse and you set it in a bowl and turned it out.
Ooh.
And the experience of slowly waiting for this thing that I had spent 2 days making to come out of the bowl, like I almost had a heart attack. It was so overwhelming for me. So it was kind of like, maybe I would never do this again.
And it came out though, right?
I would say it did come out, but not in one piece.
Yeah, it happens. But it's then deconstructed.
Back to the School of Sprinkles. Yeah, I just added a lot more of the chocolate mousse on top, which was not part of the original recipe, but it looked festive. And then nobody could tell that there was like kind of a divot missing from the top.
Yeah, yeah, you got it.
So I also want to talk to you about using savory ingredients in recipes. I think the like adobo cookie is a really great example because it has vinegar and soy sauce and bay leaf and all of these things in it. In general, how do you approach incorporating savory qualities into desserts?
Yeah, I feel like I think of it like one element at a time. And lately I've been kind of like fixated on like smokiness. I did a collaboration with Tanya at Little Egg and I did like a smoky pistachio kind of like smoked paprika kind of cinnamon bun. And I think that there's a lot of ways to balance like sweetness in a dessert. You can kind of overwhelm like the balance one way or the other if you do way too much salt or way too much smokiness where you can't taste anything else. It's kind of like that trial and error that helps me kind of get through of like, oh, next time I'll do this and next time I'll do that. Tasting and tasting and tasting along the way is really helpful because, for example, the adobo chocolate chip cookie recipe, as you let the cookie dough rest overnight, the balance of flavors, they kind of just meld more, and especially like the bay leaf and like the herbal flavor. And so I feel like savory is just like a tool for you to like better your dessert in terms of like rounding out the edges of, I think sometimes things can be way too sweet, and then that is like a temper for it, for sure.
Yeah, and I know I'm not a professional recipe developer, so maybe this is not a good swing, but I would imagine that if you want to have a dessert that isn't too sweet, sugar is providing structure and all of these things into the dessert. So taking out the sugar doesn't necessarily get you to the ideal texture and consistency that you want it to be at. So adding in the savoriness or the smokiness maybe helps temper out those qualities while still letting you use the amount of sugar that you need.
Correct. Yeah. Especially that. I forget about that. That is also very important, Liza. You're right. You're right.
Oh my God. Gold star for
yes.
me. I like that idea. I'm curious about smoky. So you did smoke paprika. Is there anything else that you're experimenting with?
I have gone, do you know, like when you go to like a seafood place and they do like charred lemons?
Yes.
And I'm like, I'm obsessed with that. And I feel like I really want to implement that in a future thing, maybe like a lemon curd or something like that.
Charred lemon bar.
Charred lemon bars. I just feel like it's just fun. And I think there's even like different woods where you could, if I get really into it, I could go into like a whole like smoking thing. But I recently also got like a dehydrator from my parents for Christmas. And so, yeah, there's so many like possibilities with that that I'm kind of just like, there's so many things I do want to try, which is overwhelming.
Yeah. Have you dehydrated anything cool?
Yeah. I actually tried dehydrating like Edam cheese, which is like in Filipino culture, it's like the equivalent of queso de bola, which is like a fiesta kind of cheese. And it's working. It's working. I will say the oils kind of still stay. And so like I'm trying to like pulverize it and get it as dry as possible. But sometimes you need like those silica gels if you're going to store it so it doesn't like get clumped and like wet again. It's a scientific experiment for sure.
The silica gel packets, I think, as something that people use in baking and styling is one of the biggest realizations that I had recently when I was talking to Tanya at Little Egg and also my friend Pearl Jones, who's a food stylist. They both, whenever they're making meringue at scale, are just keeping the silica packets and throwing them into the fish tub or whatever to keep the moisture out. Which I just love that there is a use for these things that I've been throwing out of my baked goods. So now I'm collecting them in a little drawer and I'm hoping that one day I can give them to somebody to be of use.
No, I think it will definitely come in handy. You got it, Liza.
I mean, I'm not personally going to make meringue, but maybe...
Someone will. I will.
Yeah, you will make meringue. And then I think I had a pink meringue that you did one time.
Yeah, I did it for Rini's pop-up at Winona's last September, I think. But that was like a mango lassi inspired kind of rosewater meringue filled with mango... curd, kind of a curd, but not a curd. Actually, it was just the mango kind of like nectar pulp. And then I think I had like, or like it was like a yogurt sauce, and that was a great.
Yeah, I liked that because it was a very wet meringue. Not like the meringue itself was dry, but what it was served with had a lot of moisture, so it wasn't like too dry at all, which I feel like all of my ideal foods are kind of like very saucy or like wet foods.
I love that about you, Liza. I feel like there's so much to go with that, like in terms of just like vehicles of flavor, sauces, 100%.
Yeah, when I was a kid helping my parents cook, I feel like the first thing they would let me do was make a salad dressing. And that might be why I always think about having like a sauce and then it's the vehicle of what I'm going to go with it. Were you making desserts as a kid?
I was. There was a time when I got really into Food Network and watching like the cupcake baking challenges and all
cupcake
that
wars, cupcake wars, right?
Wars, but there was also like Cupcake Wars was a thing, and also there was just like Food Network Challenge, where it was like the big showstopper cakes with like fondant heavy kind of designs. Mm-hmm. And I remember just like my sisters would have her friends over, and she was like in high school, and then I'd be like, hey, like I like can I make like a little like tasting for your friends. So it was like an omakase, like in my head, like I'm like, here's your drinking chocolate, and I just like melted down like Trader Joe's chocolate with like heavy cream, and then here's your like blondie with like ice cream and maple syrup, and it was just like Applebee's like knockoff copycat recipes. I tried so many fun things in my parents' kitchen that I don't know if I do the kind of baking where it's just like I want to make Red Lobster's like chive biscuit right mm-hmm. now. Versus now I'm like, I want to make more like original things, but it does feel like a good, like, I guess, jumping pad of like, oh, this is something that I love about this chain restaurant favorite into something that is uniquely me. Yeah, that was fun to just do whatever back in the day.
How old were you doing these?
I was like 13 when I started baking.
I honestly could cry right now that you were like the little sister making dessert tasting menus for your older sister's friends because you wanted to hang out with them.
I just wanted to try something. I know. I was just like, so I feel like I'm just like, a people pleaser, and I just wanted like affirmation, like, did you like it? And
like, words of affirmation.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a great love language to have as a pastry chef, because everyone has such a visceral reaction when you eat something good. You're going to get that response. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Red Lobster in your cookbook. I feel like there's this really wonderful appreciation of kitsch. You have a recipe for molten lava cake. Mm-hmm. Tell me about what you love about kitschy, chain, throwback kind of culture and aesthetic.
There's so much nostalgia with it, especially with molten lava cakes. I don't see those often on a menu anymore, and it makes me kind of sad. There's a certain level of, like, skill, honestly, to do these kinds of, like, trite, overdone, overplayed desserts that I think, like, to bring that to, like, a home kitchen, like, through a cookbook and through these recipes, it's like kind of like reliving something that I never also got to, in general, maybe eat as much. I was just like, oh, this sounds really good, and I want to make it in a way that I would eat it. And so that one has like ube and makapuno flavors in it. But I also remember just having like a pineapple, like guava upside down cupcakes and or like mini cakes in my book as well. And I think of desserts, like you're right, forms of expression where it's like, oh, this is like Americana to me, even though I didn't directly experience it sometimes. I just watch movies and I'd watch like I Love Lucy and kind of feel like, oh, I want to kind of translate that into flavors and tropical flavors that I know. So sometimes like that kind of exchange happens where I'm like, wow, like, in my ideal world, this is what I would have had, but I wasn't born in, like, the 60s or something.
Yeah, I love that you say Americana. I do think even the experience of nostalgia for something that you watch through TV feels very Americana to me in a certain kind of way. And I think that's something that I've noticed in your recipes, and certainly with a lot of other contemporary recipes that have a lot of online success, is that there's something that's maybe more familiar and then something that's less familiar. But what those two variables are is dependent on who the audience is. Like if you say adobo chocolate chip cookie, for somebody who is like maybe not Filipino and hasn't had adobo before, that is the unusual part. And then the chocolate chip cookie is the more familiar part. But for a Filipino person, the adobo is very familiar. And then it being in a chocolate chip cookie is kind of the twist. So it works in both directions.
Right.
I feel like that's really fun. And also sometimes when you're coming up with recipes, like, do you start from wanting to combine two explicit things, or is it an ingredient or a technique?
It's a mixture. I feel like you just said, with like the double chocolate chip cookies, for example, like I knew that like I've made a million cookies before. And I think when it's something that like I feel comfortable with, and I already know, like, I can nail the basis of this down. Sometimes, like, the flavor aspects and, like, the, like, fun flashes of, like, oh, yeah, there's a little pink peppercorn in here. Like, that happens kind of after the fact. And maybe in a way, like, I think about baking kind of like karaoke. I know the song and the lyrics are on the screen and you're just like, I can do this. And, you know, it doesn't matter who's in the room. And I do feel like sometimes when I'm cooking, I don't have that same sense of just like, it's going to be okay. There's like everything you need is like step by step by step. And not to say that there aren't directions and steps for cooking. I just feel like it's like that type A part of my brain that's just like, I need this rote kind of like process and I can do everything else right. And yeah, it's freeing in that sense. Like, I like having little cubes or like squares. Okay, wrong, squares, where I can just like interact and like put the elements in, but it's supposed to come out as it's supposed to, or like it's meant to come out.
Mm-hmm. I love that metaphor so much. It also feels like a very like Filipino metaphor to use karaoke because I
know,
feel
it's like comfort.
Yeah. Do you, are you into karaoke?
Oh my God. I grew up singing karaoke and it was like the karaoke that like they'd give you scores. You know, like
say more.
Well, there's like a really famous one. Like Magic Mike is like a very Filipino like branded karaoke, and like you would sing, and then like you'd wait for like at the end of the song to play out, and it'd be like da 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 da, and it'd be like a really outro of like this is your number score out of 100, and so I feel like it's really hard to get like 90 and above unless. I don't know what they're calculating here, but I feel like it's a lot of like, oh, did you sing on beat with the words on the screen? Or like, I feel like honestly it's loudness. I don't think they're really that. It's not intense technology. I just think it's like, were you singing loud enough into the mic and hopefully you did well. But it's harder. I don't know. The algorithm I have not mastered whatsoever.
What's your karaoke song right now?
My karaoke song right now, I have been listening to La Chaperone. Mm-hmm. And so I think My Kink is Karma is probably my favorite song right now.
I did karaoke this past weekend with Tanya, actually, which I don't do karaoke that often. And I did Glamorous by Fergie.
Oh, that's a good one. That's great.
It was a good one, except for I realized that I had to be really committed to like actually sell it.
And you're spelling.
And be glamorous. Yeah. And luckily I know how to spell glamorous.
Thank God.
That part was easy. Otherwise we would have been in big trouble. But the performance aspect, I think I needed to come a little harder, to be honest. So later this month, you're speaking on a panel that I wanted to talk to you about the theme of. It's going to be with Nassim Alkhani from Sofra and Kayla Stewart, who wrote Gullah Geechee Home Cooking, and Mayuk Sen is moderating it, which
yeah,
I love him
it's
so
huge.
Much.
Yes, so excited.
I've never met him in person, but I love his reading, and I feel like he'll be such a great moderator. And the theme of the panel is called Food Writing Across Cultures, and you're all going to be talking about kind of the path to your respective books. And I'm curious about how you approached presenting Filipino food in your book in this moment where I feel like certain aspects of Filipino cuisine, certainly like ube as an ingredient, mm-hmm. even have had really like popular trendy moments, but obviously there's more representation to go. How did you think about like presenting your food to this broad audience?
I think in like a panel setting, it's really fun to kind of like, I know like I'm the sole representative here for like the Filipino cookbook, but it's almost like I find more similarities with everyone there, despite like our different cultures, that it is like exciting to kind of be like, wow, like I fit in this conversation here. And it's very like, I guess like empowering to kind of be like, oh, you know, like I might just be this voice right now that's speaking on this panel and has the space to talk. But I feel like I also hope to like kind of bring other people into the conversation that I know, of like other chefs, Filipino chefs, other Filipino authors that I love. And I think that's kind of like what you can do in the moment where it's like, I feel so nervous because sometimes I just don't feel like I'm the type of person where I'm like, oh my God, the attention is on me and it scares me. And like, I guess like internally, but it's so cool to like share that limelight with other people and use that as like a platform to be like, hey, like you should check out these restaurants and you should check out all these like places across like the country and even outside the country that are showcasing and highlighting Filipino food. And so I guess I take it with like a lot of like responsibility, but also like I try to have as much fun as possible and still like just become like really good friends or ideally like get to know all the people on the panel because it's really fascinating. It's really cool to like hear about other people's processes. And I also just like benefit so much from that. And I get to maybe meet them again in like another setting or capacity. And I think that's really special in these like in-person events that we didn't really have in like 2020.
Yeah, I think that is a really big part of it. It also makes me think about when you were developing your book, you have this great pantry section in the book. How did you think about explaining ingredients to people that may not be as familiar with them and making it feel like the book was achievable to cook from?
Yeah, I kind of came at it from my own experience of like I'm mid at best with like Tagalog and like Filipino languages. There's many of them and my parents speak a different one than Tagalog at home, Kamapangan. I think of labels a lot and whenever I think of brands, I'm like, look out for this tropical like coconut tree on this specific like ube jar. And
that is so important,
right?
The signposting, because I was trying to buy oyster sauce recently, but there was a very specific brand that I was instructed to get, which is like the mother and her child holding each other on the label.
Oh, yeah. The panda. Yes.
Yeah. But there was there are two different aisles for oyster sauce. So I couldn't find it in the right aisle. Anyways, I went to the right aisle. I found it.
No.
But having the description is really helpful, I think.
Oh, yeah. Like visual cues. For sure. And like my friend Cherie Celestial did like the illustrations for that section. And I think having it illustrated was also a kind of nice aspect of it where I could have taken pictures like, you know, asked my photographer to take pictures in Queens or something at a Filipino grocery store. But at the same time, I feel like there's like that universality of that like brand and logo where people will know what that is just based on this picture alone. I was really excited to do that kind of section because it felt like I was just like, oh, this is just what I know. But now people can hopefully on their own terms be able to find and seek these ingredients out.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. I think another element that maybe is useful is having recipes that use ingredients multiple times. Mm-hmm. So you're not buying a jar of something and just using it once, but you're becoming familiar with all the different applications for it.
Exactly.
So you mentioned Queens. Is that where you like to go eat Filipino food?
I will say it's like probably the most like my mom and dad's kind of cooking Filipino food that you can get locally. I feel like I live in Brooklyn and I find it sometimes it's really hard. There's only a couple places I can think of like FOB in Carroll Gardens, and they have a great like brunch with just like the whole like salogs, which are like the rice and the fried egg and like a protein. But I will say like for Kamayan dinners where it's like you get to eat on the banana leaf and stuff with your friends, I really recommend going to places in Queens like Kabayan, which is I went to last year. And they have like the biggest selection of just like soup and like food, like seafood and shrimp all over on like a banana leaf. So it's really great.
Is there anything there that you always order?
I love to get like there's a bungos, which is like the fried milkfish, and it's just like really tasty. It's like marinated in like vinegar, and so it's like crispy, like salty, delicious, like a little bit sour. My favorite bite of the whole Kamayan.
I love that. I feel like anything that's so punchy and different flavor components at the same time is what I gravitate towards, which is basically all of Filipino food, honestly.
Yes, Liz. I know. You're from LA. You get it. There's so much Filipino food there, too.
Although I'm sad because one of the places that I liked in LA that's Filipino food just closed, which is Petit Peso that was down in the Arts District. It maybe closed a while ago, and I don't live in LA anymore, so I was trying to go a couple. I guess the last time I was in LA. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of good places, which is really nice. And I'm curious, in the city here in New York, when you are trying to get dessert inspiration mm-hmm. or baked goods, do you have any like places you like to go to or that you admire?
I feel like I never ventured into croissant making. There's an absence of croissants in like my book because I feel like I just never mastered it. But Radio Bakery in Greenpoint, they know what they're doing. And I feel like I'm always just like excited by like the seasonal flavors that they have. They had like a rhubarb kind of like bun back in like last year. But maybe it's back now because I think rhubarb season's coming back in.
Yeah, I had my first taste of rhubarb last week. That Noreen Wasti made like a cardamom rice pudding at a Ramadan iftar that I was at. It was my first taste of rhubarb for the whole spring. And I was very dramatic about it, honestly.
You have to be dramatic. It's so like seasonal and like, oh, it's like ramp season. It's like, oh, when will I be here again?
Yeah. So the rhubarb that you had at Radio Bakery, it was in a croissant. How was it?
I think it was like more like a bun, I want to say. Or it could be. Yeah, it was. It's been a while. I think about it a lot, but I'm like, it's been so long since I had it. But they do great like savory kind of like croissants too. So I'm always kind of just like wanting to go there. But you have to get there early because I feel like at 3 p.m. by the time they close, it's like slim pickings at the end of the day because everyone's gotten all the croissants.
Yeah, I feel that. How do you feel about ice cream in the city?
I love ice cream in the city. I feel like I guess I keep referencing Greenpoint, but my boyfriend lives in Greenpoint.
It's understandable. Also, it's a great dining neighborhood.
We love Greenpoint. I like pro Greenpoint. But there's the Screen Door. Have you ever been to Screen Door?
No. What is that?
It's kind of like really close to Mogorek Park. No frills, really cute, just like seasonal like ice cream shop. So they do like egg creams and they do like all like the milkshakes and they do like banana splits and stuff. Just like the same like 7-8 flavors on rotation. And they come back in March and then they leave in October.
I like a seasonal business.
Yeah.
What do you get out of their flavors?
I always get a banana split. I always get like I ask for a marshmallow fluff and then I get like strawberry. And sometimes chocolate, but then just whipped cream and just like the cherry. I know it's like very simple banana split. There's like, no, I don't add the chocolate sauce. I don't add like the strawberry sauce or anything. But something about marshmallow fluff and like the chewiness of it is just so good.
Also, I'm just going to say ordering a banana split, I would not say is a simple order
at
an ice cream place.
Sometimes I feel bad, but they're so excited about making it. Usually when I'm there and like I think the owner is usually working there too. She's like, you want a banana split? I got you. And I'm like, yes, I'm so happy.
They're probably excited to get to do something different. Yeah. And it is just such a cheerful order. You also mentioned egg creams. Yes. Do you like egg creams?
On record, I feel nervous because I know a lot of New Yorkers probably listen to this podcast, but I don't know. I don't think I've had a good egg cream.
This was entrapment because I don't think there is such a thing as a good egg. I don't think there's such a thing.
I'm looking around. There's only two other people in this room and we're like...
We're in like a windowless studio, so it's going to smashed through the wall,
and
Mr. Kool-Aid Man
mad
style.
At us. I just don't know if I've really gone, like, there's not supposed to be ice cream in it, right? It's just like syrup and like.
It's seltzer and syrup. There's no egg nor cream in an egg cream.
And I feel like it's kind of misleading, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I really would love, if anyone is listening and is a fan and has a place they would like to go, I sincerely would love to go and try one. And I've been to some of the places in the city that are famous for them. And my take is not a good take, which is that this is from a Depression era staple. And I think that it was probably the best thing people could afford in a moment in time. But in this moment in time, if you can afford ice cream or a milkshake, it is probably going to be a more satisfying dessert.
Yeah. Or like at least get like, I don't know, you know how people have like root beer floats and like Coke floats, and like that's what I was expecting when I was going to get an egg cream or some sort of like butterscotchy kind of that, but it wasn't. So sorry to people who love them.
No, it's okay. I appreciate that we can be real with each other about the limitations of egg creams. So it hasn't been that long since you finished your cookbook and it's been out in the world, but I do want to know how you felt about writing a cookbook in hindsight and if you would be interested in doing another one in the future.
Yeah, sometimes I think that it was easier when I didn't know what went into making a cookbook and just went in with it like blind.
All hopes.
No, person being like, this part is next and this part is next. And like, although that's what your editor kind of does, like little by little throughout the process, I don't think you really know until you're in it. And I feel like it's a really fun process. I don't get me wrong. Like I wouldn't regret ever doing it. And I probably would make another one probably. But I do think it's just like years of your life that like I think in total, like, you know, I probably started 2020 just doing like proposal stuff and like seeking out an agent, that it was 3 years until pub time. And I do think even then I'm like, I feel like I've been on a book tour that just never ends sometimes. I'm like, I get to do a panel this month. Like, you know, that's crazy. Like this book came out February last year, which is really exciting and which is like a blessing to kind of do. But I will say it is an overwhelmingly exciting process that can kind of, you can get bogged down sometimes in the details, and like copy edits that you get can be kind of, you know, like I think there is like a push and pull sometimes of this is your vision and this is what you want. And at the same time, like you're working with so many more people than you're used to on like than your blog or like than like a regular recipe. You're doing 75 or 200 at a time. And so I think scale is something that like I was kind of amazed by in terms of just in doing it. And then after the fact, just it's too much. It's so much, almost too much sometimes.
Yeah. How many recipes ended up being published in Mayumu?
75. And they were all 75 that I had. Like nothing got cut. I was like, everyone asks, is there anything extra? I'm like, no, that's all I had to give.
Yeah. I think it is a big undertaking. It's bigger than I even realized, as I have not done one myself, but from talking to people about it. And I do think with social media, yeah, you spend a long time publicizing it and talking about it, but also there's this pressure to be doing the next thing. And I kind of feel like we should normalize, like, however long it took you to make something, it's how long you should get to enjoy it without feeling stressed about having to do the next
thanks,
one.
Thanks, Eliza. That feels really good. I have like a good 3 years. Yeah,
I'm going full therapist as we sit in these new nice chairs.
Oh, it's very Fraser-like in here. I love it.
So to close, you know, this podcast is called Taste. We're talking about your taste. I want to play a little taste check with you. So I'll give you some categories and you can just tell me the first answer that pops into your head.
Okay.
Favorite food-related accessory that you own?
I have a deviled egg fascinator.
Okay, wait, say more.
So it's like I found this Etsy shop called Beholder Fashions, I think they are. And then they make them out of like felt and like different materials. So it's kind of could be styrofoam. I don't know. But it's basically just like a big old like half of a deviled egg just sitting on my head with a clip. And I was bald at the time when they gave it to me. And I was just like, I got to grow hair for this. And I did. And I wore it at like a surrealist party like last summer. And it was so worth it. It's so worth it.
Okay, I love that you found the perfect moment to wear it,
yes,
too.
Yes, I did.
Your go-to lazy snack?
Hot Cheeto Puffs dipped in cream cheese.
Why specifically the puffs?
They have more substance to be able to like dip, and it's a better texture.
An amazing technical answer.
Yes.
Your favorite cookbook?
Right now, Bread and Roses by Rose Wild.
The dessert that you're most likely to make at home?
Like a sponge cake with like strawberries and whipped cream.
The dessert that you are most likely to buy from someone else?
Baklava.
Your favorite New York City restaurant?
Fin du Monde in Greenpoint.
Your favorite New York City bakery?
Cora in Long Island City for Filipino donuts.
What's your order there?
Oh, they have an amazing like churron. So it's like the fried banana. It's like a fried churro with like banana caramel and like banana chips on it.
a restaurant that you wish could be your neighborhood restaurant?
Kalaya in Philly.
The most underrated piece of kitchen equipment?
Those spice blenders, ones.
Like
the tiny ones. You know when it's like you just want to like grind a little bit of stuff, but you don't want to use your whole...
Like a spice grinder.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay, and finally, a fictional food scene, like from a movie or a book that you most want to eat.
I watched Matilda, like the 1996 version, like on a loop as a kid. And I love that scene where it's like the Miss Honey's dad's chocolate box. And like, it's just like all the chocolates. I know one of them is Ferrero Rocher, but I just like, I've always wanted to eat like the whole box in one sitting.
Well, now I also want to go eat the whole box in one sitting. Thank you so much for coming on the show. This was so much fun.
Thank you, Eliza. It was great.
This is Taste is hosted by Matt Rodbard and me, Eliza Abarbanel. The show is produced by Shalia Harris and Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. Theme music by Steve Rydell. Visit Taste online at tastecooking.com and make sure to subscribe to our newsletter for updates on all cool things happening.